Okay. Now, the result of maliciousness, this one's real interesting, okay, is you feel guilty. Yeah? I mean, look at the psychological mechanism here, how karma works psychologically. You know, what does the malicious mind do? It attacks others. It thinks of how to harm them. It inflicts harm on others and makes them feel miserable. So what's the karmic result in future lives? We feel guilty. Yeah? We kind of turn that maliciousness in on ourselves. Yeah? And feel guilty. We feel suspicious. Why? Because we caused other people fear. We feel paranoid. Yeah? So all kinds of, you know, this fear, paranoia, discomfort, suspicion, ill at ease, all of these things, you know, happening because of no apparent reason, this is karmic result of maliciousness. Yeah? Like even, I had one other high school friend. Yeah, I remember, I don't know what happened, but at one point in her life, it's like she could barely walk out of her flat because she was just so afraid. She lived in a nice community. She was married to a nice guy. Externally, things were pretty, you know, were okay in her life, but she was just completely overwhelmed by fear. Yeah? Yeah. Why does that happen? Karmic result of maliciousness. I mean, luckily she isn't like that now. Kind of, because karma doesn't last forever. You know, experience the result and then it finishes. Yeah? Well, we can even look in our own life when we get fearful, nervous, tense, suspicious for no reason at all. You see, this is exactly how we've caused other people to feel in the past. Or if we feel guilty about things that, when we haven't done anything, you know, when we beat ourselves up emotionally when we haven't done anything at all, then this is kind of, you know, why does that happen? Why do we experience so much emotional torment? The result of maliciousness. Uh-huh.
I'm out of job. I mean, I wonder if...
Okay, so what you're saying, I'm going to try and summarize it, is that, you know, it seems like there's some kind of influence from karma, but it also seems like there is something going on psychologically in this present life, mm-hmm. and there also seems like there could be some physical things going on too. Mm-hmm. And that's completely possible. Okay, in other words, when we say these things are due to karma, it doesn't mean that karma is the only cause of them. Okay, because anything that exists, it has a principal cause and it has cooperative conditions. So the principal cause, you know, is the chief thing that makes that thing happen. Yeah? And then the cooperative conditions are all the other things. Yeah? So, like, if we look at a flower, the principal cause would be a seed. The cooperative conditions are the water and the earth and the sunshine. Now, that doesn't mean the water, earth, and sunshine are irrelevant because they're only cooperative conditions, because we all know that there's no way the seed can grow without them. So those things do count and they are important, and whether they're there or not are going to influence things. But the chief thing that's like kind of propelling the thing to happen is the seed. Okay? So we can say that, you know, maybe one of the chief impetuses, the energy behind it, would be the karma. Yeah, but then you're right. There's definitely things going on in this very lifetime psychologically that make the thing keep going on. You know, I mean, there's a psychological reason also why Liz Taylor gets into one thing after another after another. There's a psychological reason why an addict keeps shooting and shooting and shooting. Okay, so there's some of that going on too. Yeah, but it's like the karma was the principal energy that created, you know, the circumstance so that the mind would go into that way of thinking so easily. Okay? And then there also is a hormonal influence too. But that is influenced by karma, because karma influenced why we got born in the body we got born in. Okay? So, it doesn't mean that the karma is sitting there and pushing, you know, your pituitary gland. Okay? But, you know, and there is a hormonal influence, but then we're born into the bodies, you know, it's like, you know, if you choose to go to Honey Bear Cafe, you know, you're putting yourself there, then once you're there, you're going to hear the music, you're going to eat the food, you're going to meet the people. Yeah? So the karma might propel us towards that body, and then once we're in that body, we'll live with that particular nervous system and genes and hormonal system and digestive system and everything else in it. Yeah? So do you have, you know, when we say these things are due to karma, it doesn't mean it's only karma. There's also, I mean, definitely many other things going on. Yeah? And it doesn't mean that, you know, like if somebody is suspicious and paranoid, that you just say, well, this is their karma, so can't do anything. You know, psychology won't help because it's karma. That's clearly not true because many times, you know, some therapy or talking or this group or that group can really help. But then, like you said, why is it sometimes it helps and sometimes you go through it 10 years because it's not helping? Well, that's because the karma is really heavy, really strong. That principal energy is like a bulldozer, you know. So until it gets kind of weakened and exhausted, the mind can't click in to another way of viewing it. Yeah? Actually, you know, and this is why we're constantly emphasizing why purification practice is so important. Yeah? Because if you purify before the karma ripens, then you don't have the problem. Or if you have the problem, it isn't as strong as it otherwise would be. Yeah? And then oftentimes even, you know, the result comes, I mean, depending what the result is, if you've broken your leg, you can't purify the karma of having broken your leg because your leg is broken already. You can't go back into the past and undo it. But like, let's say you got the karma to get cancer, you know, that karma's ripening in the cancer, but then if you do a lot of intense purification, it can purify that karma and enable maybe some of the medicine or diet or whatever you're taking to cure your body. Yeah? So often, in the Tibetan community, where people are still healthy enough, you know, when they get sick physically or sick mentally, but they're not too sick, then they're given, you know, purification practices to do. If somebody's completely flipped out, you know, difficult to have them purify because, you know, the mind can't think straight. But, you know, if people are just suffering like a lot of sadness or guilt or this kind of thing, purification is very, very useful. But then also therapy and vitamins and these things help too. So I mean, this is all coming down to dependent arising. That means that something happens not because of one factor, but because of a whole conglomeration of many, many different factors coming to make it. Yeah. So again, you know, really have to remember that although I'm saying this is a result of that, it doesn't mean it's a result of only that. Then the karmic result of wrong views is that when we try and practice Dharma, we feel dull. You know, like you're feeling pretty good during the day, and you come to teachings, and then kind of the mind just can't hold it together. This is karmic obscuration. You know, like a high lama, you know, when I was coming and living in the different Dharma centers, you know, a real high lama would come and would be teaching. And then, you know, of course, the day when you finally get to sit in the front row, you can't stay awake. You know, and you drank two cups of coffee before, and then and even though your mind was fine, it was like this incredible, weird kind of dullness just comes over. I see a lot of nodding heads. Just out of the clear blue sky, this fog, this dullness, and like you cannot, for the life of you, stay awake. And as soon as you dedicate the merits and get up, you're completely okay. Wide awake. Yeah? I've seen this happen so many times. Yeah? So, I mean, this is karmic result of wrong views. Or, we're awake for worldly activities and snoozing during the Dharma ones. Okay, no impetus, no interest in Dharma. Or even you actually go to the teachings and you read a book, you find it really difficult to understand. You really struggle with it. You know, I mean, we all struggle with the Dharma, but when you really struggle with it, it's like your mind just gets contorted. I can't get this, you know, just like that. That's the result of wrong views. When it takes much, much time to generate Dharma understanding, you know, it's like you go to teaching year after year after year, and like something's not sinking in. You know, it's like you know the words, but like your heart feels like this desert. You know, the teacher talks about love and compassion, and you just sit there and feel bleh. Or sometimes it happens, they talk about love and compassion and you're sitting in teachings and you just feel so angry. And just incredible anger. Yeah, I mean, you're not the only one that happens. I mean, like when it happens, that's like, how can I sit in this teaching? You know, like I remember, you know, being with some of these really high lamas and like, how can I not be like this, you know? You know, and then you talk to other people, and you know, people's minds in all sorts of weird states sometimes in the middle of teachings and initiations. Yeah. And you can really see, I mean, it's like, and I think actually when it happens in a Dharma setting like that, it's really good to think this is purification. Not just the ripening of karma, but just really purifying it. Because karma ripens, you know, but purifying is like, you know, the karmic seed would have ripened into something this big, but you only experience the result that's this big because you're purifying. So often, you know, when you're in a Dharma situation like that and something negative happens or unpleasant happens, it's because it's, you know, maybe a really strong karmic seed, but it's ripening in that relatively minor way in that situation. So you might sit in a teaching and be really, really angry. Or one other thing that I've seen is like, whenever we would have introductory courses at Kopan, inevitably, almost everybody got sick. You know? Or you look at His Holiness when He teaches in the springtime, most everybody gets sick. Yeah? Colds. You know, it's usually just colds. I don't want to scare you away. Maybe I shouldn't tell you this. But, you know, but it's like so many people get colds. And I really think this is, you know, negative karma ripening because we're in a Dharma environment that kind of provokes it to ripen quickly. Okay, anyway, so a result of wrong views is, you know, just the mind is dull, it's ignorant, you feel really stupid, you feel really heavy, you feel completely confused. Yeah. So whenever that happens to our mind, and it does happen to all of us, then it's really good to do some purification. You know, like when you're studying something or you're reading something or you're meditating and your mind is just stuck and you're confused and like, you know, then get up and do some prostrations and do it for a few days. You know, just really emphasize the purification. Very, very helpful. Yeah. And I think I've told you this story when I did Dorje Sempa retreat the first summer after I had met the Dharma. And sat in this retreat for 3 months, and I couldn't, you know, it's like my mind's completely berserky, but I'm trying to say some of the Vajrasattva, Dorje Sempa mantras. And then when I went back to Kopan the following year and listened to teachings, it was all of a sudden like, oh, was this what Lama Zopa was talking about last year? You know, it's like I was understanding things in a completely different way the second year rather than the first, and I think that's because of having done the purification practice. Yeah. And if you can take that attitude, then when the stuff comes up, you don't take it so seriously. You don't jump in and really believe all those thoughts that are going on. It's like, okay, this is, you know, it's like when you wash out an ink bottle, and you know, the ink comes up, but it comes up and then it flows out the top of the bottle and it's gone.
I have an example.
when this happens, you shouldn't think the purification caused you to suffer. Because the purification didn't. I have a negative karma did. Yeah, but the purification is washing the ink away. It's not putting the ink there. One nun I know, she was doing retreat, and she got this incredible boil, apparently, on her cheek. You know, this really painful boil on her cheek. And she was in a break time and was walking around, and she saw Lama Zopa. Well, what happened here? Well, I have this huge boil. And then she said, fantastic! I said, this is so good. You're purifying so much negative karma, you know. You would have been born in the lower realms for eons, and now it's like all finishing by this boil. Huh?
And then it seems like sending all
So the question was, when you're in the middle of the day and your patience is being tried and you need to do some purification real quick, what do you do? The breathing meditation, but what you do is you imagine that whole tumultuous feeling inside, that when you exhale that in the form of smoke, and that comes out of you, and the moment it goes out, it just dissipates. It just completely evaporates and doesn't exist anymore. And then when you inhale, you imagine inhaling light, which is the nature of kind of being peaceful and compassionate. You know, so you focus on your breath, doing that purification, exhaling the smoke, inhaling the light. And that's real good to do, you know, when you can't say, hey, can you be quiet? I need to prostrate. Yeah.
The mind being threatened by the if I don't do this right, I'm
going to
be born
and go
into something.
It's not a threat. You see that? When we're thinking that, we're going back to Sunday school.
I didn't go there very much.
Okay. Yeah, you did. Yeah, it's like this kind of cultural feeling we have of, you know, of threatened and you better do it or else, or, you know, be careful because you're going to get punished.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more just a thing of result, you know. When you get a peach, you know, the peach isn't the punishment of the peach seed. It's just the result. Yeah. And the chili pepper isn't the punishment of the chili seed. It's just the result. So nobody's threatening us. And there's no or else, but it's like, if you like peaches, plant peach trees. And if you looked and, you know, you've planted chilies instead and you don't like chilies, then take the chili seeds out of the ground. Yeah? So it's just kind of it's a feet on the ground, let's just look at this reasonably, you know? We don't need, you know, threat and fear and guilt and, you know, that stuff we can leave somewhere else. Okay? I mean, this really involves, this is a new way of thinking. This is really a challenge to us to see things in a new way without all this judgment. It's coming back to the same judgment thing, isn't it? Right. Cancer is not a punishment.
Yes, and no other suffering.
Yeah, no other suffering is a punishment. There's no concept of punishment in Buddhism.
But you're a Lama Zopa speaking. It doesn't sound like that.
Because Lama Zopa, the Tibetan Lamas they're incredible, but they don't understand the subtleties of our cultural perspective and way of looking at things. And the thing is that you can say certain things in Tibetan and translate them. And Rinpoche's mean, when you say it like these certain words in Tibetan, it means this, but we hear those words from our Christian upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear something different. Yeah. I remember one time Rinpoche was talking about pleasing the guru. And he was giving all this talk about how important it is to please the guru. And I'm just going bananas inside because I was hearing, please God. And I said, please God, you know what? What the hell? This is not what Buddhism is about. You know, you don't have to please anybody in Buddhism. You know, Buddha doesn't sit there and want us to please him. And we don't have to please Buddha so that Buddha will be nice to us and give us sugar pops. You know? But it's like when you say those words to a Tibetan, they don't put all that stuff on top of it. But you say it to me and I'm back 5 having dwelt many, many years with an extremely rebellious mind and having struggled a lot with the teachings, then whenever I kind of feel like, oh, well, all this is happening because of the way I'm seeing things, not because of what Rinpoche is saying. Yeah. 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 And see, this is where it's real difficult working cross-culturally because you say one story to a Tibetan, they interpret it one way. You say the same story to a Westerner, they get a completely different meaning out of it.
So what does please the guru mean?
Please the guru means, it means from your heart, for your own benefit and the benefit of others, try to become a Buddha. It has nothing to do with pleasing somebody else so that they'll like you and they'll be nice to you. It's more like, you know, the spiritual teacher, what is the spiritual teacher's deepest, most heartfelt wish for us? That we become Buddhists. So whenever we act in a way that is according to the Dharma so that we approach Buddhahood, that is pleasing to our teacher. Not because the teacher gets anything out of it, not because of some, you know, all this junk of, you know, being pleased or displeased, but simply because, you know, there's somebody who really wants us to become a Buddha, so they really rejoice when, you know, we start getting our act together. But, it, you know, it wasn't something that was easy to dialogue with Rinpoche because it was real hard for him to hear where I was coming from. Yeah?
Otherwise, compassion doesn't arise. Judgment.
And Buddhism is about compassion, not about judgment. Yeah. Yeah. And you can see the judgment is based on an extremely narrow view that isn't seeing the picture. Yeah. Whereas compassion is really based on seeing the interdependence and seeing that we're exactly like them.
The reason why I put my judgment out is so that I can make a full movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a real good point. Yeah. That the judgment protects us from feeling what it's like to be that person because it's too scary. Mm-hmm. So we just wall it off and blame them. But you know, that doesn't mean that we have to, you know, just get overwhelmed by fear. It's not a thing of, you know, okay, so I'll stop judging and then I'm going to get overwhelmed by fear. It's more I'm going to stop judging and then I'll see, you know, you can develop this kind of softness in your mind towards yourself and towards others. Because we all are just trying to be happy. Yeah? Well, that's all we're all trying to do. And so and we have the Buddha potential within us. And we make mistakes sometimes. Yeah? So, you know, if we can kind of see it in that way, then there's some kind of softness in our view. So we don't judge the other people. We don't judge ourselves. But we realize things happen because of causes. And we make mistakes, so we create those causes. But we can also create other causes. And we do, you know, very often.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's no mathematical formula for how long it takes karma to ripen. you know, they say that only the Buddha has the clairvoyant powers and to see all the specific things of, you know, this happened because of this karma, which took so long to ripen. You know, in general, if something is a very heavy karma, it will ripen quicker. Yeah, or if something is very habitual, you know, that makes it heavy also, then it tends to ripen quicker. But that isn't a hard and fast rule. Because things depend. Yeah? So when you're really stuck in terms of the Dharma and feeling confused, you don't want to practice at all, and yet it seems like that's what's being put out as the antidote to overcome it. So what do you do? Purification doesn't have to be, you know, sitting down and doing mantras and prostrations and those kinds of things that are really difficult for you to do when your mind's confused. Okay? What you can do is a general thing of, you know, we can develop regret. I'm confused. So whatever karma I did in the past, I really regret that because I don't like being confused. So whatever I did in the past that's bringing this result, you know, if I had like lots of wrong views or something in the past, I really regret having them, you know. And in the future, instead of just jumping on the bandwagon of my wrong views, I'm just going to sit and go slowly. You know, I'm not going to jump in and I'm not going to force myself, but I'm going to go slowly. So you see, you're still doing because there's four opponent powers. There's not just the last one of the remedial action. There's four of them. So you can still have regret for whatever it is that's bringing the unhappy circumstance. You can still make a determination, you know, to try and, you know, not follow the wrong views again in the future, or at least, you know, go and ask somebody questions when we have problems instead of, you know, sitting and wallowing in it ourselves. We can still generate compassion for other people who are confused exactly like us. So there right away you have three of the four opponent powers. And then instead of doing prostrations or something like that, you cook at Cloud Mountain. That's incredible purification. You're serving a community of people practicing Dharma. It's incredible purification. Really? You know? Yeah? So there's many ways of doing purifying actions. It's not just, you know, quote, these heavy-duty religious things. You know, it's offering service to a community of practitioners. Or it's offering service in the greater Seattle community or greater Castle Rock community. You know, to people who are poor and needy, or to anybody who has difficulties. Yeah? Yeah? It's making offerings to the chickens. Yeah? So, I mean, you can transform all these things into your purification activity. There's two kinds of things going on, because I know this well. There's the causal motivation and the timely motivation. Okay, remember we talked about those? The causal motivation. You know, so let's say she takes the job and she says, I'm doing this job for the benefit of all sentient beings. But then one morning she wakes up and she's in a really lousy mood. Oh, this crummy oatmeal. I wish these people weren't here. You know, so it's like, it's a mixed karma. Yeah, I mean, there is something negative because they're out of her mind. Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, well, why is she there doing it at all? Because there was some virtuous thought that made her be there. Yeah, otherwise she'd quit the job and go away altogether. And then the power of the object, in other words, cooking for people who are doing Dharma practice, you know, is much better than cooking for any old other person. Yeah, because you're helping people that are really trying to purify their minds and become Buddhas. You know, when in the early days, you know, when we were first living at Koh Phan, you know, all of us, you know, ex-hippies, you know, who went there and shaved our heads and, you know, put on robes, we were all going, we're going to become Buddhas, you know, go live in Nepal, go live in India, meditate, we're going to become Buddhas, you know, forget everything else. What did Lama Yeshe do? Well, Margaret, who was a librarian, ran the library at Copan. And I, who was a teacher, taught English. And Adrian, who was a doctor, you know, opened the clinic. And then he started sending us out to the Dharma centers. And like you're working at this Dharma center with these incredible people you can't believe. You know? You know? And it's like all we wanted to do was go meditate and be blissful. And Lama's telling us to go work at this Dharma center, you know, where the pipes are breaking and the, you know, we're pouring the concrete the night before the meditation course starts and the roof is falling in and, you know, everything's happening. Why? What are we doing? And, you know, after several years of doing this and being very upset about it, it finally kind of dawned on a bunch of us that this was purification practice. Yeah. That in no way, shape, or form were we ready to sit down and go to caves like our dream had envisioned and meditate. Yeah? That we needed very simple purification. You know, cooking in the kitchen, weeding the garden, you know, putting the bricks on top of each other. Yeah? I had to type and put out programs and flyers in Italian. So, you know, whenever you're working in the context of, you know, a spiritual community, because you're of your underlying wish to become a Buddha, you know, you might be creating a lot of negative karma if your mind's really angry and uptight and disgruntled, but because of that wish that got you there and the power of the object, you know, and especially if you're under your teacher's guidance, then it becomes, there's definitely purifying effect. Definitely. Yeah. Let's sit quietly for a few minutes.